All right, the next case is State versus Weichman. Again, this case is State versus Weichman, and Ms. Hartner, you may approach and present your argument.
Good morning. May it please the court, judges, chief judge, counsel. My name is Chelsea Hartner. I'm with the Public Defender's Office in Madison, Nebraska. I represent the appellant, Roger Weichman. This is an appeal of a denial of a motion to dismiss pursuant to Nebraska Revised Statute Section 29-3805, which is the speedy trial statutes that pertain to interstate prisoners in the state of Nebraska. Just some factual background here. Mr. Weichman was incarcerated at the Department of Corrections upon the filing of this case in the Madison County Court, which happened on May 4th of 2021. A warrant was issued for his arrest on May 7th. On July 8th of 2021, Weichman's request for disposition of untried charges, as well as the certificate from the Department of Corrections, was filed in the county court and was also received by the county attorney on that date. And he did stipulate to that in the hearing on the motion to dismiss that that was the date it was received. On July 27th, he first appeared in the Madison County Court. Counsel was appointed, and the case was rescheduled to August 10th. On August 10th, he did not appear. He was scheduled to appear by video conference, specifically Zoom, and the journal entry indicates he wasn't able to appear, and his court hearing was rescheduled then for August 24th. On the 24th, he wasn't a present, but his attorney was present and asked that the case be scheduled for preliminary hearing, which it was on September 20th of 2021. On that September 20th date, the preliminary hearing was held. One count was bound over, count two was dismissed, and then he was scheduled for district court arraignment, which was initially set for the 21st of October and rescheduled to the 22nd. On the 22nd of October, he entered a plea of not guilty in the Madison County District Court, and then trial was set for February 14th of 2022. He did have some pretrial hearings in between there, none of which continued the trial date past that February date. And then on February 4th, Weichman filed his motion to dismiss pursuant to 29-3805. At the hearing on that request, the trial court determined that the period of time from July 8th to February 14th was 221 days, which would be over the 180 days that the state has to bring him to trial. There were three time frames that were at issue at that hearing.
Before you get to the three time frames, let me ask you this question. On February 4th, when you filed the motion for discharge, the February 4th motion for discharge, the one that's at issue here,
yeah,
does that stop the clock, the speedy trial clock from that point in time when that motion's filed to the point that it's ultimately ruled on?
Well, the trial court didn't rule that way, and it was decided on the following Monday, and so our trial would have stayed on the same date had we had it.
I asked the question for a different reason, though. Is it your position that you contest that motion would stop the speedy trial clock?
I would say it doesn't, and it didn't in this case either. And that wasn't the calculation.
Well, then all you would have to do is appeal to get past the speedy trial in that scenario.
Right.
The court overruled the motion.
It did.
And so if filing a motion to discharge doesn't stop the clock, then the clock's still running today. Is that correct?
Well, I would say the appeal time would be told from that calculation. So when we come back, we would have a short amount of time if it was overruled. But it wasn't here. I would say it doesn't. We just used the date of the trial was the calculation, was the date that we used to calculate the numbers at that hearing.
I mean, I know this is a different type of speedy trial calculation, mm-hmm. but the other type of speedy trial calculation, there's tons of case law that suggests that once the motion for discharge is filed, the clock stops running.
There is, but there's also many cases that say the jurisprudence regarding to 29-1207 doesn't apply to this. It's a separate set of statutes, and so I would argue it doesn't.
Okay.
There's nothing to say it does, and that's not how we decided it when we had that hearing in the lower court.
Okay.
So the three time frames at issue were the July 27th to August 10th of 2021 time frame. That was 14 days. That was after his first appearance, and then when a counsel was appointed. The state argued that that was for good cause. The lower court ruled it was for good cause. We're arguing that it wasn't. The August 10th through the August 24th was a period of 14 days. Mr. Weichman didn't appear that day. It appears that Department of Corrections Secretary requested the continuance. The court granted that, and it was set for August 24th. And then on August 24th was he also wasn't there that day, but his attorney requested a preliminary hearing, which was scheduled for September 20th. That's the other period, 27 days, that was at issue in the lower court.
Why hadn't a preliminary hearing been scheduled previous to that? What took so long?
He wasn't there to request it previously. At the arraignment, they didn't ask if he wanted one at that point. They just appointed counsel. And then the next time he was there, or supposed to be there to do that, he wasn't. And so the court just moved it because the Department of Corrections had requested to move it.
What effect, if any, did his pro se motion to dismiss have on any of this?
I think that's another issue here. way I see that, he asked for two alternative reliefs in that motion. That was filed before he was arraigned, before he had counsel on that matter. He requested either a speedy trial discharge, or in the alternative that he be set for arraignment. And so on, I think it was June 30th, 2 days after the motion was received, the court scheduled it for arraignment. And so I would argue that at that point, the court granted one of his requested reliefs, and I think that...
Did the court rule on the other?
There's nothing in the journal entry to indicate that it ruled on anything, at least within the journal entries.
Does the county court have jurisdiction to rule on a motion to dismiss on a felony case?
It's my understanding that that would be properly heard in a district court. And so they couldn't have done anything with it anyways at that point. And so I would argue that when they set it for an arraignment on the June 30th order, that disposed of that motion. And since that happened before the July 8th date when the certificate was received, I don't think it should have any impact on any of the arguments that I have. So the first 14-day continuance, I'm not able to find anything on point here, obviously. I found many cases where they are deciding other issues and they count that period of time after the first appearance of counsel, but nothing on point. He's entitled to counsel, court-appointed counsel, if he's indigent, which the court adjudged he was. And so there's nothing in the statute within 3805 itself that would be specific to that. I know there's lots of reasons in the traditional speedy trial statute why you can toll those periods of time, but that's not here. So I think it was an error of the lower court to discount that 14 days when it made its calculation. The second 14 days would have been when he wasn't able to appear by Zoom. Obviously, that's not at any fault of Mr. Weichman. That was something with the Department of Corrections, not able to get that set up. At the hearing, the state provided an email that seemed to just ask for another date. There really isn't much else given as to good cause. State argued that, well, it's COVID-related, but doesn't provide any evidence as to why it's COVID-related, just to state it's COVID-related. I don't think that's enough for good cause. And I don't, you know, I think the court erred when it discounted that period of time as well. And I think the longest period of time would have been the 27 days from the scheduling of the preliminary hearing. So it's a felony case. Generally, they start in county court. Every defendant is asked, do you want a preliminary hearing? Unlike 29-1207, the speedy trial statutes for the inmates doesn't really differentiate between felonies and misdemeanors like it does in the traditional speedy trial statutes. The statute reads they have 180 days after the receipt of the certificate from the prison system to try on any indictment, information, or complaint. And so that doesn't differentiate between the two. And so they have to have a preliminary examination under the preliminary hearing statute, which is 29-1607, which they can't file an information until they either have the hearing or waive it. And so unless that statute provides an exception to withhold that time in the counting of the 180 days, I think it was improper for the lower court to do that. And so I would ask the court to rule in favor of the appellant here. to find that the court erred in its decision on this matter, and then remand it to the lower court with directions to dismiss. Thank you.
Before you go, if we were to find that a motion to discharge does stop the clock, so to speak, would you agree that Mr. Weichmann, having filed his own motion for discharge, that the time frame wouldn't run on this until that motion for discharge was ruled upon?
Well, I would say it was ruled upon then on the 30th when they set it for arraignment, because he requested, he didn't request just that, it was either dismissal for speedy trial reasons or set for arraignment. So when the court set it for arraignment, I would say it ruled on that, and so it would start on the July 8th date, and he would, it would be past the 180 days at that point.
Thank you. Ms. Tangeman?
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. As set forth in our brief, the state believes that the district court was not clearly erroneous in finding good cause to extend the 180-day deadline by 55 days. And as my opposing counsel discussed, those 55 days involve three separate delays that occurred in county court. I will just briefly address Judge Welch's question regarding the motion for discharge. It is not something that I thought much about today, but I will say when I was reading cases yesterday, there is at least one out there, I believe, it may be a Court of Appeals case where they talk about the clock stopping when the motion for discharge, I think in that case they called it a notice that the court treated as a motion for discharge, and I'm pretty sure that the court found it stopped at that point. And just in general speedy trial, my understanding is once the motion for discharge is filed, the calculation is done, and then it's a question of, as that date, has speedy trial run or not? And so if it hasn't run, then the motion is premature, and, you know, in the regular speedy trial, you get into waiver and things like that. But I do believe there's a case out there. Unfortunately, I did not note down the name of it, but I think there is discussion in one of these in intrastate detainer cases. I know there's not too many out there.
Well, while we're on that point then, before you move on, I know the court didn't resolve it this way, but when the matter first appeared on June 28th, Mr. Weichmann filed his own motion for discharge, and it doesn't appear as if that was ruled on until August 27th. If you look at, we don't have a lot of record here.
Right.
What we have is the orders.
Right.
And that motion for, to dismiss
right.
is continued until August 24th.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move forward. So it looks like that the motion to dismiss wasn't ruled upon. And for that reason that I'm asking, was the clock not running until that was ruled upon?
I think it's unclear, and I think it's complicated by the fact that we're dealing with a committed offender who's under the different speedy trial statutes. So normally in a felony case, the statutes, the speedy trial clock's not even going to run until we get the information filed. So we don't have this type of problem here. Once it's filed in district court, then clearly it's going to toll. I think it's unclear from the motion itself what he was even asking for. And I think that's why the county court in this case, even though, as you said, our record's kind of unclear, the court was not going to hold a preliminary hearing until it decided what is going to happen with this random motion we have here. The court continued the motion initially for 14 days once counsel was appointed, because now he had counsel and there was a pending motion. Then we have the combination of the court running late and the Zoom issue, which then continued it again. And then finally on August 24th, I do think that motion was disposed of, but I don't think our record tells us how it was, whether it was overruled by the court, whether it was withdrawn from counsel. We do not know how that was done. But that was the further delay that now, once this motion is taken care of and this delay is over that was caused by the appellant, then the court felt comfortable setting it for a preliminary hearing.
Was there no record made of the August 24th hearing? Or did
there's just a journal entry. Everything that the state introduced at the evidentiary hearing was just journal entries from county court proceedings. So whether or not there were verbatim transcripts of what happened, I don't know. It's not in our record. It's clear that that hearing addressed that because it specifically lists the motion to dismiss on there, but then the further entry is state get the defendant here for preliminary hearing, and we're setting it for this date. So unfortunately, on this record alone, we do not know whether it was drawn or whether it was overruled, but I do believe that it was disposed of at that point because we have no further discussion of it. And I think the record's also clear that the county court was not going to set it for a preliminary hearing until this motion was dealt with, because it kept getting continued until they could get everybody there to discuss that motion.
Thank you.
I think I don't intend on talking about the delay to the Zoom and the core issues. I think that's pretty easily disposed of. Regarding the other two, I do agree with my opposing counsel that if the district court had found that just counsel being appointed or just setting a preliminary hearing, that's enough to exclude that time. I do think that would be incorrect, but I don't think that's what happened here. I think that time was excluded because there was a delay. There was a delay of the preliminary hearing being set because of what happened with this pro se motion that was filed first by counsel. So I think when you look at the circumstances of this case, the district court was not clearly erroneous in finding that those time periods relating to the July 27th to August 10th, and then the August 24th to September 20th were good cause.
So the basis for the good cause from August 24th through September 20th is just because they, in your view, the motion was resolved on August 24th.
Yes. And I feel that from our record, it is clear the county court was not going to hold a preliminary hearing until that was disposed of, because it kept getting continued until they actually had a hearing on it. And in addition to just the motion causing the delay, we also have the fact that the defendant was not at the August 24th hearing from everything our record shows, and they were going to transport him there for the preliminary hearing. So we had the delay in the transport getting him to the court in order to have that preliminary hearing on September 20th, as the court ordered. The only other thing I would note is my understanding is that the appellant was released from corrections in March of this year, which was after all of this happened. So I do not think it has any implications on our case, but a couple weeks ago the Supreme Court did argue a interstate detainer case where the defendant was discharged from corrections during the pending of his speedy trial motion. So I just wanted to note that for the court in case it would have any relevance on this case. I don't think it probably does, because at the time our court ruled on the discharge, he was still in corrections.
And we don't have anything in the record on this, right?
No, you would have to take judicial notice from, you know, the corrections website. That's all. I think the certificate from corrections that started this whole ball rolling talks about his potential release date, which was also March of this year.
Does the county court have any basis to rule on a motion to discharge?
No, I don't think so. And I, unfortunately, because we don't have the verbatim transcript from the hearing, I don't know the county court's reasoning in continuing this motion. I don't know if it was just until, hey, now you have counsel, let's discuss this, what are we doing here? But no, I think that because these are felony charges, the county court was very limited in what it could do, arraignment, bond, and then either a waiver or a preliminary hearing.
I guess I'm trying to figure out what possible reason there would be to delay the preliminary hearing. If the county court basically has jurisdiction to set bond mm-hmm. and hold a preliminary
right.
hearing. I mean, aren't we speculating on what the reasons are for the court to delay these hearings?
I do think we're speculating as to why the court did what it did, but I do think our journal entries show these continuance happened because he filed this motion. And once he filed this motion, the county court was not going to have a preliminary hearing on it until it was disposed of. Whether that was incorrect or not, I'm not certain, but this is the facts of this case.
We really don't have an order that says that it was disposed of.
No, we do not.
So that could be the county court saying, I'm not going to dispose of it because my job is to have a preliminary hearing.
I agree. There's nothing in the record to show exactly what happened.
Okay. It's clear, though, that the motion to dismiss was a pro se motion for discharge under the applicable speedy trial statute.
Yes, I believe so. I know he cited, he used the untried, that type of language, and cited a Chapman case. I don't remember if the statute itself specifically was, but he did talk about being committed and speedy disposition of the untried charges, which is typically the language used under these statutes. Just briefly, one more thing that the district court didn't know that I also did not know is in an alternative in my brief, but we did have two continuances in the district court by defense counsel once it was bound over. Whether or not that comes into the calculation, I'm not certain, but all of the case law makes it pretty clear that any motion by the defense for a continuance is excludable under the statute.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tangerman.
Thank you.
How far over did we go with Ms. Tangerman?
Ms. Tangerman, we went over 10 seconds.
Okay. Ms. Hartner, if you have anything you want to say in 10 seconds, we'll let you say it.
I guess just in response to the last thing she said, I believe, and I can't remember the case right now, but there was a case where they didn't exclude pretrial motions that didn't push out the trial date. I would say it's pretty much the same thing here. It was continued for further pretrial, but the trial date didn't change.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the case will be taken under submission, and we'll issue a decision when we can. Final case of the day, then, is State versus Svendegaard.